Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for our annual F This Movie Fest episode. Running up to F This Movie Fest 6 on February 11th, I am joined, as always, by my best friend, Doug. How are you, Doug?
I'm man. I'm good, man. I'm a ghost.
You sound... Why are you a ghost in this instance?
No,
I don't.
It was the last podcast. You were doing this great Boston accent. It was Matt Damon.
Oh, on our Goodwill Hunting episode. Applause from the crowd at Saturday Night Live.
Why didn't I do my Skyler ghost impersonation, which was perfect? I will. I'm a ghost.
Me name is Skyler Ghost.
So I'm doing it now on the 1987
show. Give us a kiss.
Yes, it is our 1987
Bolt
show.
Your uncle.
We are going to be talking all kinds of 1987 stuff. We're going to be getting you all hype for F This Movie Fest on February 11th and all kinds of, fun stuff. Just a reminder, yeah, if you're not already familiar with F This Movie Fest, it is the world's only all Twitter film festival. It's taking place on Saturday, February 11th. That's this Saturday, if you listen to the podcast on the week that it comes out. We begin at noon Central Standard Time, and we will be watching 5 movies from the golden year of 1987 and writing about them on Twitter with the hashtag FThisMovieFest. At noon, we will watch The Princess Bride. We will follow it up, or rather, we will get to the choppa with a little Predator. Then we'll steal some Huggies with Raising Arizona.
Next, give me the Pampers.
Next up, it's time for Bitches Leave with RoboCop. And then finally, Wolfman Has Testicles. We will finish things off with the Monster Squad.
I'll be using the hashtag Bubble and Squeak. I will. Me am.
I have the worst...
I don't know, man. That sounded pretty authentic. So we're obviously very excited about it. And all this week at FThisMovie.net, we are celebrating 1987 with a series of articles and of course, this podcast and all kinds of fun 1987 goodness.
Yes.
I want to quickly say thank you.
Ooh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Miko V and to Timothy Smedlin for your donations to FThisMovie.net this week or over the last 2 weeks. I don't know when they were, but thank you guys very much for your donations in keeping this site alive and keeping me in cocaine. And I just want to thank you for that.
My favorite
It's not
cocaine,
cheap. Cocaine.
My favorite cocaine expression is booger sugar. People use the term booger sugar to describe cocaine. And I think that makes it sound so harmless.
People still do?
I did the other night when I was doing cocaine.
When you were doing
honey,
so many rails.
Try this booger sugar.
I love your podcast, Blowing Rails with Doug.
I have to pause every 7 minutes to go take a massive cocaine dump, but otherwise it's a really good show.
That's when you snort a lot of cocaine, right? That's what I call it. Like, dude, give me a huge cocaine dump right in my nose. That's what I'm always telling people. And they look at me funny.
I drive around my car like Balky Bartakamos in True Romance. I'm just covered from hairline to chin in cocaine. And
that's a cocaine dump.
That's a cocaine dump.
I got
it. And I'm coming home in a body bag.
Before we talk 1987 and perhaps name our favorite movies of 1987, that was one thing we decided to maybe try to do this episode. Douglas, have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen a couple things.
I can't wait to hear about them.
Not 1987 specific, because I've been saving all that goodness for this week. And I realized also, just a quick side note about 1987, there's a lot of 1987 movies I haven't seen and a lot I have that I won't, like, we're going to talk about our top 10 1987 movies. And I'm like, does Disorderlies make my top 10 list? And the answer is no. But
I've never
I'm like,
seen Disorderlies.
I saw Disorderlies. I think my parents rented Fatal Attraction for themselves.
Also
and their,
from 1987.
That's correct. They have some neighbor. It was like a key party. And they're like, kids, go to the back room. We rented you Disorderlies.
I remember this. That's when your brother got electrocuted in the street, right?
I'm not sure I get that joke.
Oh, that's an Ice Storm reference.
No.
Have you seen
no.
The Ice Storm?
No.
It is not from 1987.
I was going to say, keep it relevant,
I apologize.
But my parents, yeah, they were like, my dad was balls deep in The Neighbor's Wife, and I was watching Fat Boys rap to Disorderlies. So it's my number 10. What are we talking about?
Have you seen anything good lately?
Oh yeah. I saw you.
I saw
Lion. Have you seen Lion?
I have not.
If I
could quickly interject a plug.
Yes.
Lion was the film reviewed on a recent guest appearance I made on the Cinema Jaw podcast, also from Chicago, a movie podcast out of Chicago. They were nice enough to have me on. They reviewed the movie Lion. I abstained from that conversation.
Oh.
Just as I will abstain from this conversation.
Well, what
which
was
then
take?
Becomes a monologue.
Wait, has that podcast dropped? Because if that's...
It just came out today, the day we're recording this. I believe
okay.
They gave it 3 out of 4... And 4 out of 4 Jaws.
That's a thing.
They're on a Jaws system.
The Jaws system. I give it 7 out of 15 Jaws. My scale is out of 15. It's good. It's super easy to watch. And Dev Patel does a great job. And it's the kid who plays him as a younger boy in India is maybe the cutest kid ever. You, the audience, saw him at the Golden Globes come out with Dev Patel to present, and he is very tiny and wearing a tiny little tuxedo and was the cutest thing, and I wanted to put him in my pocket. He's also adorable in the movie. The movie is good. Nicole Kidman does a great job, which is surprising because she is becoming pure feline. She is just totally trans. Like, I feel like there was a commercial right when CGI was becoming more mainstream, especially when commercials were incorporating CGI, and the big buzz thing to do with CGI was to morph one thing into another thing. Like, there was a Jaguar commercial from 1995 or 94 that morphed a car, a Jaguar jumping into a Jaguar, the car driving. And I feel like Nicole Kidman is morphing into a Jaguar jumping from a talented actress. And it's surprising because her face was shocked me. It was shocking. But she does a great job in Lion. And it's good. And I kind of understand why it's getting all this buzz, because it's a great story. It's also a true story. When you combine those things, like, it's a story well told, plus it's true, and they show some actual footage at the end of the movie, it really tugs on your heartstrings, Mr. Bromley. But it's fine. You know, it is what it is. So was that pretty much similar to Cinema Jaws?
I think they liked it more, but that's okay.
No, I liked it.
I don't remember them doing a run on, like, Jaguar commercials.
Well,
the technology made famous by Michael Jackson's Black or White video.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
When it's face goes from one thing to the other. It's like, we figured out the way to, like, combine the two things to make it one thing. It's like, Nicole Kidman is, like, at the other end of that spectrum. So,
like, she's mid-change? Like,
she is mid-change. Because
she's going
soon,
to be a Jaguar, but she's not there going, yet.
And there are people out there, you know, the extreme plastic surgery folks that, like, will insert whiskers in their cheeks, and I feel like she's one step away from that.
She signed up for Lion because she misunderstood.
She's like, oi!
It's the part I was born to play!
I'm gonna play Scar! She misunderstood. It's not the cartoon. I also saw Hidden Fences. I'm sorry, Hidden Figures.
Oh, come on now. Figures? Nope.
I know. It's also just fine. I'm actually more surprised why that movie is getting so much people are freaking out over this movie, and it is good. Okay, that is my baseline review. It is a good movie, but it is the most predictable and by the numbers movie you'll maybe ever see in your entire life. You're familiar with the story, kind of. I'm assuming that
it's predictable because it ends with us going to space, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's like, you know, we've been there, done that. Why can't we land a man on the sun is my next question. Why can't you make my shoes smell good if you can land a man on the moon? No, so it's three black women in the 60s in segregated South who work for NASA at Langley in Virginia, and they're geniuses, and all three of them have interesting stories and interesting trajectories, and they all have success. One of the main one we focus on works specifically, she's what's called a computer, where she actually does the really, really, really hard math before they actually have calculators and computers for the Atlas rocket, which is what sends men into space Americans into space for the first time. But it is so by the numbers and formulaic, and it's to a frustrating degree, so much so that like this woman who is a brilliant mathematician has to take all of her stuff and run across NASA's campus to go use the colored bathroom. And her boss, played by Kevin Costner, is like, where is the computer? Why isn't she? She's never here. She disappears for half an hour at a time. And it goes through these beats. And we all know as an audience, like, oh, this is going to lead to them having a conversation where he's saying, where were you? And she's going to be like, there's no bathroom for me here. And they'll have to fix it. And we know this the first time she does it, but we have to go through the beats like idiots. So much so, and in this movie, why it's even more formulaic is because Kevin Costner is so outraged that there's separate bathrooms. We all pee the same color, he says, that he takes the crowbar and he goes and smashes the sign that says colored women for the bathroom. And it's like, this never happened. Even her running across campus never happened, as I later read in the trivia on IMDb.
See, that infuriates me when it becomes like the white savior of the civil rights. Like that, you can't just make that bullshit up.
Well, it's equal parts. This is a real story where real people really suffered and people are assholes and they're brilliant and they deserve everything that white people get. And then Kevin Costner, who's like, and by the way, Kevin Costner is presented in this movie. Everyone who introduces him is like, don't be surprised if he doesn't talk to you. And he's mean to everyone. And he's like the nicest guy. He's probably the nicest guy in the whole movie. He's like willing to go to bat for all of his employees. He just wants like
good. Very concerned with their pee color.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, this is very, very apple juice. Like you should make it more like light lemonade, like country time to the moon.
Where's my crowbar? Time for me to break some shit.
And so it's, and that's part of my frustration with it too. And don't get me wrong, again, it's good. And the performances are a little over the top, a little sort of like fan waving lemon Coke with chipped ice. You know what I'm saying? Like a little eccentric, but it's a great story. And I love the space aspect of it too. There's some other elements of the story that I wasn't as interested in. Like there's a romance that just doesn't do anything for me. I love the NASA stuff. What's his name from Big Bang Theory is in it, who does an okay job. I'm usually annoyed at everything he's in. So I guess that's the most positive thing I'll say about him. But it's also, you know, so my takeaway again was you've got a real problem and there's real people suffering, but then they do these cartoonish things also. And I get it. It's a movie. It's a crowd-pleasing PG or PG-13 movie that's inspirational for young girls and for young black girls especially. So why are we – like they don't know how to deal with – I feel like they don't know how to deal with it necessarily. It's like, do we treat it lightly? Do we treat it with severity and show the real side effects of these awful decisions that segregated South made? And it's just, it's a kind of, I feel like the balance is a little off.
I haven't seen it, so it's not fair for me to speak on it. But based on what you're telling me, it reminds me of other similar movies, and this may be a better movie. But every couple of years we get this movie, and it's sort of the crowd pleaser historical drama. We get The Blind Side, we get The Help, we get Hidden Figures. And my issue with each of those is that they are movies about perhaps the struggle of African Americans. In two instances, specifically the struggle of civil rights, I believe, right? The Help is about?
You know, I've not seen The Help.
Okay.
And I kind of,
so I apologize. But it's very much about the struggle of African Americans, but it's told almost exclusively for white audiences. And so therefore we need white surrogates who sort of break down the tear the sign off and break open the door and check the pee color. And it's like, why are we telling this story only for white audiences? I don't know. Again, I haven't seen it, so it's not fair for me to speak on it. But I'm happy to see that it's making a lot of money, because, again, now we have yet another film with a largely African-American cast that is very successful at the box office. And you would hope that at some point someone in Hollywood would be like, oh, once again, we continue to underserve this audience. And if we would just make good movies, then perhaps everyone would see them. I'm happy that the movie's doing well. I can't speak to its Oscar potential or anything like that.
You know, it has. I don't think it has legs for awards, but maybe it does. I don't know. I've never really been in tune with what wins and what doesn't win. And again, the performances are all good, and I feel like it's a good story, and it's worthy of being told, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I take a little issue with how it's handled, the severity of certain things, the lightness of other things. And again, they're making a PG or PG-13. I honestly don't know what rating
it is. I believe
it's
PG.
Right, and because I think there's no...
Because except for that scene where Costner gets the golden shower, I'm almost positive. Like, there's nothing dirty in that movie.
Water sports.
He's got it's for civil rights, see?
Abra, pee in my mouth. It's my favorite kind of propulsion, Abra. Makes no sense. The last thing I will talk about very, very briefly is by my daughter. I watched a movie with my daughter called The Secret Life of Pets.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think you've seen also, right?
Oh, yeah.
The only reason I'll bring it up, because it's not good, but I don't even care. It's not offensive. It's not aggressively bad.
It's just like completely mediocre.
Yes.
It's not Angry Birds like... This is making my kid dumber.
Right.
But it's also not giving them anything.
I think there's a couple funny moments, and it's mostly just because I like Jenny Slate and Louis C.K. So just by the goodwill that they have with me, I'm laughing a little bit at the things that they say or the things that they do. The reason I bring it up, though, is not even to talk about the quality of the movie, because it's fine. I don't even care. Like, I'm sure my daughter will watch it again and be fine with it. I'm always just amazed, though, because as parents, and I'm still a relatively new parent, there's things that I want to introduce to my children that are important to me, or things that I want to be important for us as a family. And you introduce these things, and sometimes it lands and sometimes it doesn't. And it always just amazes me. And I'm sure I was the same exact way when I was a kid. What kids, and let's be honest, they're not clones of myself, you know, just like your kids are not clones of yourself, except that one kid that you keep in the basement and we don't talk about, that kid who's cloned of yourself.
Oh, clony face?
Clony face. Clony McClone face. And so obviously they're their own people. They're unique individuals who have their own tastes, right? But I'm always just blown away. I guess my whole point is to say I'm always amazed and blown away by the things that they remember, right? Because I'm thinking we took my daughter to see Moana. Great, you know, motivational, great protagonist and female character. My daughter has not talked about it once since watching it. We took her to see Finding Dory. Finding Dory, not the best, but also like I think has some good messages and some, you know, my daughter has not talked about it once. She talks about My Secret Life of Pets. And she's like, the other night I'm putting her to bed. She's like, Dad, I'm Gidget and you're some Snowball. And I'm like, Gidget, like Sally Field. I'm so confused. My daughter knows Sally Field's filmography really well. We drill it every night before bed, but this was not that. This is one of the characters. I think it was Jenny Slate's character, the puffy white Maltese or something in the movie. That's Gidget. And it's just like, oh, this is the takeaway. This is the thing that my daughter, and it's just not frustrating. I don't want to sound too dramatic, but it's just interesting that, there's things I want her to see and things that like are meaningful to me, not even necessarily better. Like, is Star Wars better? I think so, but
better than The Secret Life of Pets. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, but I'm saying like, it's amazing what they,
no, it's frustrating. I understand is too strong a word, but I've been there where like, I'm trying to introduce my kids to good stuff and it's the garbage that sticks.
Right. I don't know.
She's just like a
That's it. She's just like a rank chump. That's all I say. My daughter, total rank chump. She really biffed it with these movies. She biffed it.
Do you remember that song from the 80s? Everybody rank chump tonight. Everybody have fun tonight. Everybody yes. rank chump tonight. Rank I will talk about some movies. I was going to talk exclusively about 1987 movies.
I'm so sorry.
No. I mean for me. I don't mean like you were supposed to do that. But there's one that I want to mention before I get to that. And that is a movie from 1982, the year of the first F This Movie Fest. And it's called They Call Me Bruce. Are you familiar with this movie?
I don't think so.
Okay. So when I was a child, we used to get the TV guide, even before we had cable, which back then I believe was called On TV. We would get the TV guide, and I would read it every week and kind of memorize certain things. And I would look at pictures of Fraggle Rock and just wonder, like, what that show was about, because, you know, I was, like, drawn to puppets and shit like that. And in the back of the
file,
in the back of the TV guide, they would list all the movies that would that were going to be on that week. And there would be a little write up and maybe a runtime and maybe a star rating. I don't know. But this is how so many movies, including plenty of movies that I've never seen, got burned into my brain. Like Author starring Al Pacino. Like, I eventually saw it, but I've grown up my entire life being very familiar with, like, Missing, directed by Costa Gravis, because I remember reading it in the back of the TV guide as, I don't know, a six-year-old, and one of the movies that was on that showed up a lot in the back of the TV guide was this movie, They Call Me Bruce, and I was like, I don't know what this is. So finally, as an adult man, I caught up with They Call Me Bruce because it's streaming on Amazon Prime. I think Code Red is putting it out on Blu-ray later this year, but it's streaming on Amazon Prime. I don't totally even know what to say about it. It's like I want everyone to watch it and also no one to watch it. And it stars this guy, Johnny Yoon, who apparently like had a brief run as like a popular stand-up comic. He was like almost like Yakov Smirnoff before Yakov Smirnoff, sort of. He was kind of a novelty comic. He showed up on The Tonight Show a bunch of times. And as I was watching it, I immediately had to Google him because it feels like the kind of movie that's written around all of his hacky Asian jokes. All of his jokes, like the punchline is chop suey or something. Like, he's a Korean guy who just tells jokes about any Asian ethnicity, because in 82, I guess we were just like, whatever, they're all the same. And so he adopted all of them. And so the jokes are like super hacky, but I was so fascinated by this movie. It's about a guy who just like wants to be Bruce Lee and then gets hired to like deliver cocaine, but he doesn't know it.
Booger sugar.
It's a comedy, right? Some booger sugar. It's a comedy. It's not very funny at all, except there's one scene where there's like a fly. He's at a table. I think he might have some chopsticks, of course. And he says, like, I'm going to get that fly. And he goes for it. And the fly keeps buzzing. And the people at the table say, like, oh, you were wrong. You know, that fly's still alive. And he says, yes, but he'll never make love again. And I thought that was the funniest joke I heard.
That's pretty good.
And that's the one funny joke, and They Call Me Bruce. Otherwise, 87, all the way.
The other night,
I did an 87 double feature of The Running Man and Hellraiser, your favorite.
Okay. Yeah, I love The Running Man, for sure.
Hellraiser, I think, is still awesome. I do still think that, like, I guess the spoilers for Hellraiser, once Uncle Frank in Andrew, what's his name, Robinson, if that's his name, inside the dad's body, you know, Uncle Frank kind of inhabits the dad, and then Jesus wept, and then Uncle Frank is gone. And then there's like 10 more minutes of movie where Christy runs around like zapping Cenobites with the box and then gets chased by the thing. Nothing after Uncle Frank is gone quite works for me, but everything up to that point I think is so good.
Are those the scenes where she's upstairs in the house going from, like, hiding in a room and going to the next room and goes to the other room and is in a room? Because I feel like that's...
I think it might be.
It's good stuff.
I think it might be, but I love that movie. And the
Jesus
Running Man,
wept.
The Running Man. Julia, don't look at me. Julia. Everyone's dubbed. It's very strange. So Running Man is awesome. Like, it is so much fun. It is peak Schwarzenegger. So it comes out in 87. I was 10 years old, and I'm positive I've told these stories before, but Predator came out in 87. I had read the novelization probably twice already. We would take these two-week trips up to Wisconsin, and while we were there, we would still get the Chicago paper twice, like the Friday version of the Chicago paper. And the first thing I would do is I would flip to the listings for the Elk Grove Cinema, which had just reopened a few months prior in 1987, right down the street from my house. And I would always want to see what was there. And the first weekend we were there, they opened Predator. And I was devastated because I knew...
Stuck.
Right. And we're not going to be back for 2 weeks. And by the time we get back, it's going to be gone. And I was brokenhearted the entire trip. And we got back and sure enough, it was gone. But my dad took myself and my brother. He drove us to Naperville in an electrical storm to see Predator. And it was like the greatest night of my life. It was the first rated R movie I ever saw theatrically. And then apparently the gloves were kind of off because then I was allowed to see not all rated R movies theatrically, but several. Because by that Christmas, I was allowed to go see The Running Man with my friend and his dad. And once again, I was just in my glory. Like, The Running Man is such prime Schwarzenegger. Like, Predator is such a better movie, but The Running Man, is he, like, he does so many one-liners in The Running Man.
Yes.
And you have Jesse Ventura playing
Christmas.
Oh, my
tree.
God. Hey,
my favorite one.
Lighthead. Lighthead, he says, before Christmas tree. You have Jesse Fish. Everything is like, everything is a joke. Everything he had to split. Everything is a joke. But I love it. I love the cast. I love seeing Jim Brown play Fireball, and I love Jesse Ventura, and Richard Dawson is like such a great villain. It's like such a goofy movie, but it's also like so violent, and Harold Faltermeyer's synthesizer score is awesome. I had so much fun watching it the other night.
What's your favorite Maria Conchita Alonso line in the movie?
That would be, you just referenced the character of Dynamo, who Ben Richards calls Lighthead.
Lighthead, and Christmas tree, Dynamo, gotcha.
Exactly.
Yes.
And he's sort of the opera singer, which is his character. We have the guy who's...
Of course.
Right, exactly. We have Sub-Zero, okay. It's cold, and he's got like hockey. He's got a razor blade hockey stick. We have Buzzsaw, naturally, carries a chainsaw. We have Fireball, carries a flamethrower. Mm-hmm. What's left? How about Dynamo? He lights up and sings opera.
Erland Van Lith.
And that's is morbidly obese. And so he's about to rape Maria Conchita Alonso because, of course, that was something we were very casual about in our 1987 action movies.
And he's about to rape her while smoking a cigarette, probably.
And she starts laughing, and he says, "What's so funny?" And she says, "There's nothing funny about a dickless moron with a battery up his ass." And I can't do the impression right now because I'm losing my voice, as you guys can hear. But
it's the worst line delivery.
There's nothing funny about the dickless moron with a battery up his ass.
Right, in a movie full of... She's Irish. It's okay.
hey, there's nothing funny about a dickless moron with a battery up his ass.
I will hunting.
I'm a ghost.
Ooh, the battery up my ass. Look here, see.
Look here, see.
Hey there, Lighthead. Hey, the Christmas tree.
A tidly tiddly too.
It's a movie filled with bad one-liners, and that one line.
Oh,
I love
the
scene also. It always stuck out to me when I was a kid watching that they end up with the rebellion, the underground people.
Run by Mick Fleetwood and Dweezil Zappa.
That's right.
Dweezil Zappa has like one line, and he doesn't do it that well. He goes, "Don't touch that dial," and it's not that great.
I keep thinking, by the way, of Dennis Leary in Demolition Man playing the other sort of underground
I'm sorry,
roles.
Edgar Friendly?
Doing his shtick,
right.
You know, like,
"I want a cheeseburger, I want a cigarette and a cheeseburger, I want a cigarette and a cheeseburger and a prostitute."
There's a scene where she goes, where Amber Mendez goes and has to like get the code to something. And it's the longest number ever. And he's like, "Remember this." And it's like, you know, longer than a phone number, if I remember correctly. And she's like, yeah, sure. And I was, when I was a kid, I was always like, that, I tried to remember that like the fifth time I watched it and I couldn't remember it.
She's got that, she's got that Mary Lou Henner brain.
That's right. I don't forget anything. Except my pot of gold.
And then at the end, like, they kiss. It's the weirdest, like, when was this established as a romantic relationship between you two?
You're right. Oh, my goodness. I love that movie so much. It might make an appearance on my top 10
OMG. The only other movie I'll talk about I just watched this morning, and it was a movie I'd never seen, called The Believers from 1987. It is a John Schlesinger-directed movie starring Martin Sheen as a police psychologist who gets wrapped up in the world of, like, voodoo and Santeria, although I never quite understood why. Like, that connection never goes, like, why is this all happening? Like, okay. Totally watchable. Some really good scenes. There's an opening that's, like, horrifying. I won't even say what happens, but it's so well done and so well acted. I was into it. I mean, I enjoyed the movie, but I will say that, like, the voodoo stuff never quite clicked for me in a way that I was like, oh, right. And I know that was kind of big at this time, right? Because isn't this around the same time as Serpent and the Rainbow?
And Angel Heart, isn't that voodoo?
There's some voodoo in Angel Heart, speaking of movies that might make an appearance. Yeah, so I guess 87, big year for voodoo.
It's funny you say that, because now that I think about it, like, I feel like my introduction as a 9-year-old in 1987 to, like, what is voodoo? What is Santa? What is this, you know, a pincushion man? You know, like, of course that was, like, the formative years of grade school, and these movies just happened to come out. I don't think I saw these movies when I was that age, but still, it is, why is that stuff in the zeitgeist of the right. of the time? It's so interesting.
It's not fair that we weren't able to see Angel Heart in 1987, because as young boys we were the audience for Angel Heart, because
Lisa Bonet gets naked.
You
in it,
have
so
all
I'm...
these adults out in the world talking about, like, can you believe Lisa Bonet, that girl who you're crushing on from your favorite TV show, has a graphic sex scene in a movie that you can't see? And it's the meanest taunt.
I was actually more interested in, like, can you believe Robert De Niro opens his eggs like that?
Why did they stick with the name Louis Cipher? Can you believe that, 10-year-old Patrick?
It's like the Monster Squad, Dr. Acula.
Right. Wait, hold on. Let me.
Speaking of 1987, Phil.
It's Alucard, okay?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And he just randomly figures out, like, to write it like it's an anagram. And he's like, wait a second. Dr. Acula is the movie that JD is trying to make on Scrubs.
Oh, dear.
We've teased it enough. Everyone.
By the way, you know, they call me Bruce as a question mark at the end of the title. Just, that's an interesting little tidbit.
Yeah, there is
they
a sequel.
Call me Bruce?
There is a sequel called They Still Call Me Bruce. I haven't seen it yet. Might be a little
they
harder to track down,
Bruce?
But don't you worry. I am going to track it down.
I have no doubt you will. Anyway, sorry to digress.
No, you're fine. I was expertly transitioning into our next segment, where we talk about our favorite movies from 1987.
Yes, let's do it.
I haven't ordered mine, so I should try to do that.
1987 was a great year for our country. Ronald Reagan was president. Yeah, the population was 242 million. The life expectancy was 74.9 years. And
keep going, riff, man, riff.
Oliver North was just questioned for the Iran-Contra operations. I'm just riffing right now.
Yeah,
what
you're
else?
Doing
what
so
else
great.
Happened?
What happened? Did you like rank yours 10 to 1 or what?
Very, very loosely, just because. Yeah, you should rank them.
I'm working on it.
You should rank yours because
keep talking. I'm doing
it
right now.
Absolutely. Okay, so 1987 was a great year. The Senate voted 58-42 to reject Robert H. Bork as U.S. Supreme Court Justice on October 23rd. The Nobel Peace Prize winner was Oscar Arias Sanchez from Costa Rica. And the worldwide population was 5.018 billion people. Now, I know what you're saying, Doug. Where is
Patrick?
That's
a lot of people.
I know what you're saying. Where is Patrick? Let's talk about movies. The highest grossing movie of 1987 was Three Men and a Baby with $167 million, followed by Fatal Attraction, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Good Morning Vietnam, and Moonstruck, rounding out the top five.
Three of those movies rated R, pitched, I would say four of those five movies pitched really exclusively at adults. Only Three Men and a Baby isn't. But like, Three Men and a Baby was the highest grossing movie of the year.
Yeah.
What
and
the hell
there's
happened?
A ghost in one of the scenes.
I know.
If my Snopes trivia would have me believe.
It
I want to say this
Will
though,
Hunting's
also.
Girlfriend.
Boy, I'm behind the shades. That's not how you change a baby. We put our babies in a pram.
Look out. Here come the drug dealers. Because that's a fucking plot line in that movie.
Look at all the guns.
By the way, I also watched Adventures in Babysitting yesterday with my kid. And first of all, you know, it's probably too soon to be showing him that movie because there's so much just, you know, Thor's a homo, you're an asshole, don't fuck with the babysitter. I mean, there's so much stuff in that movie that I'm like, oh, you shouldn't be hearing this.
Yeah. And let's not forget the total disregard for the value of dishes.
But also, that's – don't tell mom the babysitter stuff. Please Whatever. Don't confuse your Keith Coogan movies. Keith Coogan, Ugh. Follower of F This Movie on Twitter.
What's up, Keith?
Adventures of Babysitting, like, I apologize, all of you who love it. I get it. You have a nostalgic bond for that movie. It's not a very good movie. Like, Elizabeth Shue, I'm in love with. I will always be in love with her. There's no fucking way she's 17 in that movie, but okay. But, like, it's a dumb movie with mostly repellent characters. That's it.
Oh. But.
I was watching it. I was like, I was totally fine watching it. It was entertaining. It brought me back to my childhood, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, there's nothing about this movie that's actually very good.
Yeah.
Except for Elizabeth Shue.
I love her. Yeah. I love Elizabeth Shue. Give me a kiss. No tongue. Do you know 1987 was 30 years ago?
I do know that.
And it was only 10 years after Star Wars debuted.
I do know that too.
That's crazy. That's crazy. And 25 years after the first James Bond.
Yeah. Yeah, but guess what? It's also the year of the best James Bond, The Living Daylights, Where My Dalton Peeps At.
You need Mike on the podcast for any sort of insightful commentary about James Bond. He's so funny.
Not when it comes to Living Daylights. He's just going to shit down its neck. That's all he does when it comes to Living Daylights.
Wait, what happened to the Living Daylights head?
No, he ripped it off.
Oh, he ripped it off so he could shit down its neck.
Okay, so he removes its head, he shits down its neck, then he puts the head back on in the hopes that no one will notice.
Where does he store the head in between? Like, I assume he's, I mean, the shitting takes a little bit of time. Does he store the head in a refrigerator? Is it just on the coffee table?
He has a head bag that he carries.
Head bag?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It goes in the head bag. It's not, it's thermal, it's not refrigerated, but if you put a couple of cold packs in there, I think you're okay for the length of a shit.
Is it a
I think.
Is it a duffel bag? That's a dumb joke. Okay, have you done ranked? Because I've vamped
I'm done.
Long enough.
I'm done.
Okay. By the way, my ranking, I'm gonna throw you a curveball after you've ranked. My ranking does not include any of the five movies that are part of this year's festival.
Mine has two.
I'm just saying I would have two in mind.
Do you think
but I decided
you're
because there's
better
going to be
than
so much
me?
Not because of this reason specifically, but no, I'm just saying there's going to be so much conversation about the five movies from our festival.
I want Mike to shit down your neck. Bring your head back, Mike.
Shitting. He's way into probiotics, which is why he has such loose colon. But I opted the two movies that would be on the top 10 list. That I have decided to take out would be RoboCop and Raising Arizona. Those would be the two movies that
one
I would
of those
put
is on my list.
That I would put on my top. Those, I'm just saying those are they would be on my list. But for because I figured for the top 10 shows that you do for the end of the year, you make up your own goddamn rules.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm making up mine.
That's
how
fine.
You like that?
I like
how
it.
You like them apples.
Oh, boy. Wait a second. I got it. That's a
I
callback.
Got a number.
Yeah. That's yeah. I got a fucking ghost number, kid.
Did I say this in the Good Will Hunting show? I love that he walks over to the diner, bangs on the window, and he goes through the glass to the guy, to the bully from the bar. He says, "Hey, do you like apples?" And the guy's like, Yeah, I like apples.
He considers the question and then answers it honestly.
Like, I get that we have to get from point A to point B, but it's like, I would be like, get the fuck, like, I would just give him the finger and like ignore him outside. That's a guy I don't want to talk to anymore. He talked about inherited wealth and I don't like that. You're talking, regurgitating Vickers. You're talking about Vickers.
I've read Vickers.
Will Hunting.
All right, what's your 10?
My 10, it's a movie I came to recently. It's Over the Top. That's my 10, number 10 movie from 1987. I watched it as part of, I think, a Junesploitation day.
Is this for real?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I thought you were doing fake titles.
No, no. If I was doing fake titles, my number 10 would be Mordecai, followed by my number 9, Mordecai. Because, by the way, I came to this realization in the shower while scrubbing all my bits and pieces that Mordecai is the funniest fake movie title to put in any top 10 list ever.
Here's why it's so funny. And I'm sure
top 10 list, my number 1 is going to be Mordecai.
Here's why it's so funny. And I'm sure you don't remember making this joke. I might even fuck it up now, but the way you introduced it, you said, like, Morda who? Mordecai. Or, like, Morda what? I can't remember if it was Morda what or Morda who. And
yes, super funny.
It was hilarious.
I'm nothing if not always funny. No, here's my caveat to all this is these are movies. These are my personal favorite top 10 movies. These are not the best movies of 1987. These are not – I'm not putting The Last Emperor on my top 10 list.
Either.
I'm not putting Wall Street on my top 10 list. And
not
these are probably better movies.
Better than Over the Top? Probably not.
Over the Top is a super fun, ridiculous, wonderful movie. And I forget who it was. Someone just on Twitter, a female follower of ours, just watched it for the first time. And I apologize. I forget your name. But she said it was so... she had such a fun time watching it, and it reminded me how much fun I had watching it, too. It's a ridiculous, stupid movie, but I love it. Number 10. Boom, Mordecai.
He plays a character named Lincoln Hawk, mm-hmm. which is a name that someone wrote into a screenplay. And
it's
then...
my favorite president, followed by my second favorite bird of prey.
Amy Coppedge is who said that she had just watched Over the Top for the first time. And,
Amy Cobb, sorry.
They had over-the-top action figures back when that movie came out, and they had, like, with arm wrestling action and a little arm wrestling ring. I never owned any of them, but I definitely remember looking through the Sears wish book and wanting them for Christmas.
You circled that with a big old Sharpie.
Yeah, because I think I just wanted, like, a Stallone action figure, and I never had one. Yeah.
What's your number 10, Mr. Garbage, Better Than Over the Top?
Garbage Life. My number 10 is Radio Days. It's one of my favorite Woody Allen movies.
It's that kind of list. Okay. I got to prepare myself.
A list with, like,
let me push up
all
my glasses.
Good movies on it.
What's Over the Top? You introduced me to Over the Top.
Listen, I'm not
You're
bashing.
I love of it.
I'm not bashing Over the Top, but if you're going to try and insult my list, I'm going to say these movies are still good.
Understand.
I like Radio Days a lot. It's probably, I don't know if it's in my top, it's probably in my top 5 Woody Allen. It's just, like, really nice. Like, it's a really sweet, really funny movie.
That's Joke's it. On you. I haven't seen Radio Days.
It's Days spelled D-A-Z-E.
Is it anything like Wimbledon? Wait, that's not the other tennis movie.
Yeah.
What's the...
It's exactly like Wimbledon.
What's the Woody Allen tennis movie? I'm pretty sure it's Wimbledon.
Match Point.
That's not it. Wimbledon? Is it
Wimbledon?
Wimbledon. Yes. Radio Days is like Wimbledon. Patrick Bromley at this movie. My number 9. Strap on your what the fuck
Penis.
Hat.
Oh.
Oh my. Hello. My number 9 is A Nightmare on Elm Street 3: Dream Warriors.
Interesting.
It's probably my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Over the first?
Well, no, I mean, the first movie is the best, right? I mean, that's like saying Halloween is like, it's like saying side one, track one, Beethoven's. I'm saying A Nightmare on Elm Street is easily one of the top 3, if not top 5, if not top 3 horror movies of all time. I think it's your favorite horror movie of all time, if I'm
That's
not mistaken.
That's correct.
So it's number 1. It's top 1 for you, Mr. Bromley. So the first one is great. It's a perfect movie. It's really, really well done. for whatever reason, number three, Dream Warriors, is the one I saw most when I was a kid. It's the one I remember the most. It's the one whose kills and scares and scenes I remember the most. It's a garbage movie, just like Over the Top, that I love.
It's so not a garbage movie.
Put that in your cap.
And you are not alone at all, because a lot of people consider that their favorite and even the best of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Listen, if I had more time to watch Radio Days or even consider my list the second after I wrote it, because I'm going through, I'm like, ooh, he's going to hate number 8 and really hate number 7.
I won't hate any of these movies because they're all movies that I like.
No. You're going to hate like with a red hot fire of 1,000 suns. You're going to hate my number 8.
Okay.
In fact, it rhymes. What's your number 9?
My number 9 is Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn.
Hot, but tabled.
Tabled. Got it. Okay.
Number 8 is Mordecai. No, number 8 is Secret of My Success. You hate it.
I don't love that movie, no. I'm always amazed to discover like it was one of the top 10 highest grossing movies of that year.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh
it was
yeah.
Hugely
oh,
successful. And it's
hugely
not,
successful.
It's not good.
It was maybe the first movie I had seen after Back to the Future that I recognized. Like, that's Marty McFly. He's a movie star. He's the guy from the TV show that I love and wanted so desperately to be the cast as the younger brother, Andrew, I believe his name was, on Family Ties, because there's a baby in, like, seasons 2 and 3, and then all of a sudden it's, like, a 6-7-year-old. And he's blonde, and he's got the Joey Lawrence haircut. By Joey Lawrence, I mean the star of Chasing Amy, which I also watched, by the way, after listening to yours and Rob's great podcast. And my one takeaway is, if you're asking me right now, which you're not, what have you seen lately, is that I rewatched Chasing Amy based on your podcast, and it is not as good as I remember it being, but still really comforting and great, but also pretty bad.
Don't you get like, there's some stuff that's so good, and then there's other stuff where you're like, oh, I have the worst douche chills right now.
Yes. I love the scene where, this is such a minor thing, it's early on, where Jason Lee is being called a tracer, and Ben Affleck has to respond, and he does like a cartoonish like reel back to go intervene into the fight. He is such a terrible actor in that movie. He is capable of so much more. He's such a better actor than what is presented. And you're totally right with the chin pubes and the baggy clothes and the pre-caps Armageddon teeth. He's a very interesting person. Anyway, Secret of My Success is a movie that I saw with my family many, many times when it first came out and probably subsequent years. It so perfectly captures Reagan's America in the late 80s, the idea that corporate America is king and we should take over things and money is everything. It went over my head as a kid. I just really responded to Matthew J. Fox's performance as Whitfield, which when I was a kid, I thought it was Woodfield, which makes me like it even more because there's a mall by our house called Woodfield, which it's not, that's not his name. His name is Whitfield. And if I was smart enough to read his nameplate on the door, I wouldn't have thought that for probably 15 or 18 years. It was one of the first DVDs I bought. And then when I bought it in my,
I don't even
20s,
own that. Like, I own a lot of movies. I do not own The Secret of My Success.
When I watched it after buying it as an adult, I was like, oh, no, this isn't as good as I remember. But for nostalgia's sake, it's my number 8.
My number 8 is, let me find my list again, The Untouchables.
Oh, great movie.
Not on your list? Yeah, it's just great. You know,
it probably could be.
Yeah, I wrote about a lot of these movies already in that 48 hours of movies thing that I did. Because Untouchables is like what you want mainstream Hollywood movies to be. Like, it's just everyone working at the top of their game, and it doesn't talk down to anyone, and it's incredibly entertaining and beautiful and well shot, and it has a great score, and Brian De Palma just crushes it, and it's just really, really good, you know, commercial filmmaking.
It's a great movie, and if it started with – if the title was Over the Top instead of Untouchables, I might have considered it for my top 10 movies of 1987.
You didn't even like the scene where Al Capone arm wrestles?
No, actually, I like that.
He turns his hat – what kind of hat did he wear? You know, that hat that he wore, and he turns it around.
he's like there to impress Al Capone Jr. who's like waiting in the truck. Sir, don't come in here. I got an armrest. Untouchables is great. It's actually another movie that I came to late. I don't think I saw it until my early 30s and was like, man, this movie is great.
Really good Chicago movie also. Yeah,
absolutely. And yes, great movie. My number 7 is Dirty Dancing. That's right. Dirty Dancing. What? What, you're going to bag on Dirty Dancing?
Yes.
Dirty Dancing's great, man. No. You got what's his face and who's it's at the top of their game. It's like what you said before about De Palma with Untouchables. It's everyone working at the top of their game, except substitute that with Jerry Orbach and dancing in the Catskills. And then you got a recipe for magic. I'm not talking Havana Nights. I'm talking the original.
No, I know. I get it, like teenage girls loving Dirty Dancing, but it's just one of those movies that I've just never quite understood all the love for. Including like at the end of the movie, the big dance number to I've Had the Time of My Life. Like, doesn't this movie take place in the 50s or early 60s? Like, this song is clearly from 1987. Why are we all okay with this?
What did you think? Right. That might as well be in the song, right?
Exactly.
I would do at this moment. It is, it's not the best movie, nor have the previous three movies on my list. Those are also, I would say, Secret of My Success, not the best movie. I would say Nightmare on Elm Street 3, probably better than Secret of My Success, and Over the Top, the best of them all. In fact, that's my number one with a bullet. But Dirty Dancing is fine. I watched it a ton with my sister. This is my nostalgia list, okay? Everyone cut me some slack. If anyone's out there feels the need to defend me in the comments, please don't. Wink, 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 wink.
Let me blow your mind for a second, because I saw Dirty Dancing like in pieces, you know, on cable for several years. I think the first time I ever actually sat down to watch it beginning to end was with you when we saw it theatrically for its 10th anniversary, and it is now 30 years old.
That's insane.
That was 20 fucking years ago.
You and I and two lovely ladies went to one Schomburg place.
What
and watched
is
Dirty
happening?
Dancing.
It was like the night Princess Diana died, wasn't it?
Dude, I got to bring that up.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to put the timeline together. But it was the 10th anniversary of that movie, and that movie is now 30 years old. How did this happen? Yeah.
How do we get so old, you mean?
Sure. Mm-hmm. How did Dirty Dancing get this old?
It's still new in my heart. No, it's not very good. My number 7.
My number 7 is Extreme Prejudice.
Is no? What?
Nothing I, tabled? No, no tabled?
Tabled? I don't know what Extreme Prejudice is.
It is an action movie from 1987. It's kind of a Western directed by the great Walter Hill, who you would remember from The Warriors,
yes.
From our podcast. Nick Nolte, Powers Booth,
ooh,
Clancy
is that
Brown.
1987?
I wish. It has like a cast where every single person in it is someone awesome and that you're excited to see in an action movie. And it's just 2 hours of nonstop, insane badassery. Like, everyone is the baddest motherfucker in that movie. And then at the end, they all just like shoot at each other and it turns into a Sam Peckinpah movie. It's so goddamn good.
I don't know that movie, and I want to watch it right now based on your recommendation.
Really should. It's so good.
That's awesome. I lost my, because I was going to Netflix to see if it was there, and I lost my, hold on, here we go. My number 6 is The Running Man, so we just talked about that. Such a great movie. Again, the predator is better than The Running Man. By the way, The Running Man is really The Running Man, which I know it's based on the book, so whatever, it's all good. Obviously Predator is better than The Running Man. But for me, if I had to pick one over the other, I would pick Running Man, because it is so ridiculous and fun. And I love the dystopian future. I love Richard Dawson. I love it all. What more is there to say?
You've said it all.
You've said
number
it all.
6 is House of Games, the David Mamet movie. No. David Mamet's first movie as a writer director. He had been, you know, obviously a very famous playwright. Finally directed his first movie. Lindsay Krauss, Joe Mantegna, I think William H. Macy might have a small part. Ricky Jay might have a small part. It's just about con artists, and it's fucking awesome.
Awesome.
You know, just that incredible David Mamet dialogue, and just so many of his movies are so good and interesting. You just like listening to them so much. And he's so spare in the way that he directs things. And if you haven't seen it, it's terrific.
I have not seen it. I want to watch it. Right. This is
you're
why
getting all these recommendations things. From me.
Because as you're talking, I'm like typing it in my phone, like to see if it's available to stream. My number five is Lethal Weapon.
That's a great one. It is not on my list, but it was at one point.
What?
It was on my list at one point.
Oh my goodness.
If I did an 11, dear. It would be number 11.
Oh my goodness. Oh my. Hello. Lethal Weapon is, for a long time, I thought Lethal Weapon 2 was my preferred Lethal Weapon.
No.
And that was stupidity talking. Because Lethal Weapon 2 is probably a movie I'd seen later, a movie I'd seen more often, a movie where
I definitely saw two more than one.
Yeah.
But
and then
one
you
is
go back.
Way better.
No, it's way better, right? So Lethal Weapon 2 is fun. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Lethal Weapon 2. It's totally fine, right? And again, it's characters you like doing things you like. The villain scene is probably the worst in Lethal Weapon 2, so whatever. Lethal Weapon, though, you go back and watch it after thinking Lethal Weapon 2 is all that, and Lethal Weapon blows your hair back. It's like, this is so well done and such a raw, like Mel Gibson breakout movie star performance. Danny Glover, what can you say? The glove.
He's awesome in that movie. I'm writing a thing about all the action movies that came out in 87. And in it, I think I declare Lethal Weapon the best buddy cop movie ever made.
Okay.
But
not even worth a top 10 mention. That's fine.
I said if it went to 11, he would be on there. Lethal Weapon 2, which I still enjoy, is the Nightmare on Elm Street 3 of the franchise in that it's very entertaining and it's very well done, but it's the one that ruins the rest of the movies because it's the one where like the formula clicks into place. Like the addition of Joe Pesci in Lethal Weapon 2 is inspired because the first one is pretty grim and you have a character who's legit suicidal the whole time and it's pretty dark. And then the second one, they're like, well, let's add this guy and he'll be funny and he'll steal his scenes. And then that got such a response that all of a sudden it was like, well, now they all need to be funny. And all of a sudden, you know, it just becomes silly. And the first one doesn't have that. The first one's just awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Was that your five? What's
your number? That was my number five, correct.
My number five is Full Metal Jacket.
Ooh, tabled.
Okay. I should mention, though, if you are in the Chicago area and you're listening to this the day it comes out, tonight I will be hosting a screening of Full Metal Jacket at the Elk Grove Cinema, the previously mentioned theater, at 7 p.m. in Elk Grove. Tickets are only $5. Come see it on the big screen. This is my first time ever seeing it on the big screen. It was one of, you know, 87 was the year they reopened that theater, and every week I would look at the marquee and see what, you know, title they were putting up and wish that I could go see it, and I was not allowed to go see any of them.
Sure.
Even stuff that was PG-13. I remember Dirty Dancing playing, couldn't go. I remember Can't Buy Me Love. I remember Mannequin, wasn't allowed to go see any of them. Lost Boys, Full Metal Jacket was one, and I remember Full Metal Jacket playing there, desperately wanting to go, not being allowed. So now, vindicated, 30 years later, I will finally get to see it on the big screen at the Elk Grove Theater.
My memory of the Elk Grove Theater is that it was always a second-run theater. Was that the case in 87, too? Was it always like the dollar show, basically?
Yeah, it was $1.50.
Okay.
Yeah.
$1.50, yeah. So it wasn't first-run. So when you saw Predator in the paper in Wisconsin,
it had already been out. Yeah. But I knew we were never going to get to see
the Cineplex Odeon or the Plit.
Well, because that was my Spaceballs story. Like, went to our one movie that year. It was going to be Harry and the Hendersons. Yeah. I wanted to see Predator. I knew that wasn't going to happen. It was going to be Harry and the Hendersons. Last minute, my brother's like, how about Spaceballs? And we fucking go to see Spaceballs, and it's not good. And at one point, I excuse myself to go to the bathroom because it's in the Winfield Mall Theater. the Whitfield Mall Theater. And I snuck down to the theater that was showing Predator because you could look through the door because there was glass on the door. And so I could see through the window the scene of, like, right before Bill Duke, spoilers for Predator, gets killed. I remember watching that scene through the window, wishing I could see Predator.
Cursing your family.
This, I mean, yeah. 87 clearly was a traumatic year for me because it's all just like unfulfilled wishes.
That's so funny. My number four is No Way Out, a movie that's near and dear to the Schultz family. My parents had rented it for the whole family on a recommendation from our cousins who are very, very Christian. And they're very good people, but they're very religious. And my parents said, well, they love No Way Out. It's a potboiler thriller. The very first scene or the second scene in the movie.
Sean Young action.
It is Sean Young and Kevin Costner in the back of a limo, like going at it, her, you know, big old titties, you know, I mean, it's just, it's all right there. And I'm like a 9-year-old or an 8-year-old, like trying to get all I can, you know, because the Spiegel magazine was recycled the previous week. So I'm like desperately in need of something. And my brother hadn't yet had a Playboy subscription yet. And then my parents were outraged, but didn't stop it, by the way. That was like the key. Like, what is this? This just goes to my dad was an artist. And it's like, I think that whole liberal art kind of, well, the kids need to see this stuff too. And then it becomes a whodunit, basically, of political and military intrigue with Kevin Costner playing a Navy intelligence officer. And there's a leak and the Russians are involved. And it's
when
got,
you say leak, you mean... Someone's peeing on Kevin Costner,
it is
right?
Total golden showers. It is a water sport.
He wants
sport.
To see the color of their pee. It's a really a recurring theme because think about Waterworld. there's pee in that movie.
The guy's like, do you want me to pee on you? He's like, nyet. It's the only Russian I know. And it's from the Sigourney Weaver, Jennifer Love Hewitt movie. What is that movie?
Heartbreakers.
I forgot the name. Heartbreakers. A movie I like, like with a movie shame I love, but also genuinely love. Heartbreakers. It's not that bad. So No Way Out is watching it as an adult. Again, that's the theme with my list. Watching this movie as an adult, I can see all the terribleness of certain scenes and the exaggerations. Although I think it still has I think it's Gene Hackman. Is that who's the guy?
I believe so.
He's great. Obviously, everything Gene Hackman's in is usually pretty great. And Kevin Costner is at the top of his game. Speaking of, you know, people at the tops of their games. it's good, though. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I like it.
I know. You're just like indifferent towards it, and I have a history with it, which is why I like it more. Which doesn't, I can't justify it.
But it's like a super highly respected movie. People really, really like that movie, and I do remember I saw it years after the fact, so I didn't grow up on it like you did. But I remember there being a twist that was like, I think I was genuinely surprised.
Yeah, for sure, and that was I feel like it was before twists became more commonplace, and maybe I'm totally off base with that assumption, but. The twist came out of left field, and it was still organic and genuine, but was like legit jarring. And it's a little cartoonish now in 2017 thinking about it, but at the time it was like, wow, that's a crazy twist.
Yeah. Yeah. My number four is the first of two movies from this weekend's F This Movie Fest lineup, and that is The Princess Bride. I know you hate it.
Absolutely.
For me, it's a movie that has everything, save for nudity, I guess, if that's something that's important to you in movies.
Are you asking me specifically?
Andre the Giant shows a little ball sack, but other than that, it's pretty free of nudity. But again,
didn't he say anybody want my peanut?
This is a movie again that played at this same theater, which becomes apparently the most important. Like everything in 1987 revolves around the Elk Grove Theater. And it was playing there. And so I remember going on a Sunday afternoon because it was PG. Like I did not want to see it. I didn't recognize any of the cast except for Andre the Giant. Nobody else was really a name.
That wasn't enough. I mean, you're a big wrestling fan.
I was, but for whatever reason, it was just like the title put me, you know, I was Fred Savage. Yeah. I was like, what? No. And everything about it didn't interest me. But it was PG, and it meant I could go to a movie. So I went with my friend and paid my $1.50. And It was one of those that where it was like, by the time it was over, it was my favorite movie. Like,
yeah,
I loved it so hard. And for years, I would say it was my favorite movie. I think it still holds up. I think it's a great movie.
See, for me, it's like I want the whole movie just to be Fred Savage and his grandfather in the room. Like, I don't want to go to this fantasy land. I don't want to meet Billy Crystal.
Let me tell you a story about a Navy officer who loves pee. And he just recounts the plot of No Way Out.
Is he Russian? You'll have to find out.
He's in the back of this limo. And this girl comes in dressed as Catwoman.
Now get this. The girl's name is Sean Young. Not a boy. It's a girl. I'm just like, I wish it was more like, look at this. He's got Cubs paraphernalia on the wall. This is a boy I can get behind. It's Fred Savage from the Wonder. This is pre-Wonder Years? Or
might
during
have been just before.
And then it has to go to, like, you know, Billy Crystal and just, you know, and I was like, Mandy Patinkin. Broadway?
I'm excited to watch it. It's great. On Saturday.
It's a movie that I still, everyone should listen to our podcast or not, whatever. It's your life. Live it. It's a movie that I still feel like I need to watch again. Knowing that, like, my wife loves it, you, my best friend, love it, everyone who I respect loves it, and I'm just kind of indifferent towards it, and I'm not sure why. I have no idea why, honestly. So, fuck me.
What is your number three?
My number three is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Okay.
Great comedy, great performances from John Candy and Steve Martin, great direction from John Hughes. Is that who it is?
That is, yeah.
And memorable lines, a great Chicago movie. Well, at the very end, at least. I love that they finally hitched the ride back to Chicago. And there's a scene where he's standing on an L platform, nowhere near his house and nowhere near where you'd be dropped off in Chicago. But sure, it's an L train. It's like, this is a very pretty elevated platform. The city is in the background.
I like the scene where they drop him off next to a slice of deep dish pizza.
Right. It's like, you are now entering Chicago. Here's your hot dog. But it's really great. It's heartwarming. It's one of the very, very few Thanksgiving-specific movies. I know this because a couple years ago, I did this really acclaimed and well-received column called Watching Trailers with Doug, and I really tried to find all the Thanksgiving movies. And there's such a dearth of Thanksgiving movies that I had to go to, like, the New World, is that the
Terrence Malick movie?
The Terrence Malick movie with, like, pilgrims and Indians. And it's like, I guess that's Thanksgiving because it's like the first Thanksgiving, but it's, I mean, there's really not a lot of Thanksgiving centric movies. There's this, there's Home for the Holidays. And honestly, I think there's a couple more now, you know, it's been 6 or 7 years since I wrote that, but it does hold a special place in my heart. I do feel like watching it every November. It's really great. Those aren't pillows.
It's interesting, too, because that was kind of the first John Hughes movie when he had kind of graduated out of the teen movies. You know, he got to start writing more like R-rated comedies, writing for National Lampoon and stuff. And then he kind of does all these teen movies during that decade. And then his first movie, for lack of a better word, outgrows that period, is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is like an R-rated comedy for grown-ups, which was kind of nice.
Yeah. It's great.
And it's a good movie. Steve Martin is great. John Candy is really great. May he rest in peace.
Yes.
My number three is Broadcast News.
Great movie.
Great movie. James L. Brooks. I think I wrote in that 48 hours thing that if not for the end coda, it would be like a perfect movie. But there's a last scene in that movie that just rubs me so the wrong way. But talk about a movie.
I don't remember it, so now I have to go back and watch it.
It's like, here's a couple years later, and we catch up with these characters, and it just flies in the face of so much of what you want. But whatever. It's a super funny movie. It's incredibly well-written and well-acted. The things that it has to say about media are still true, and it's just one of the great, I would say, romantic comedies of the last 50 years. Yeah.
Does it have arm wrestling?
Yes. He's like, hey, what's in the news? Let me turn my hat around. He has to turn his hat around once he's going to go over the top. Lincoln Hawk does.
Over the top. My number two is Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
I love war movies, and this is one of the first ones that I really remember. There was the 86 was Platoon, if I'm not mistaken.
You are not.
And then I would say 86 and Platoon kind of opened the door for Vietnam
era
movies, and we got a glut, and it was great for the most part. This came out, I think Casualties of War is a year later, if not
Casualties
maybe
of War 87 is Full Metal Jacket and Hamburger Hill.
There's and then it kind of, you know, diminishing returns after that. After those, even Hamburger Hill is not very good, but, you know, still watchable and still I still like it. But Full Metal Jacket was the first movie. I you know, my little story with this is that I had a friend. His name was Jay. His name still is Jay. We're not close anymore, unfortunately. But I would go to his house. He lived farther away. So it was always a big production to go spend the night at my friend Jay's house. And we'd go. His parents were very lax and very hands off and would drop us off at the video store. We could rent anything. Oftentimes it was like trying to find the sex comedies, you know, the you know, and even and then the violent action movies. And we rented Full Metal Jacket, and it was jarring. I mean, this is probably a couple years after it came out that we saw it, but still the scene with Joker in the bathroom at the barracks, it's basically the end of Act One, the halfway point of the movie, is probably the most dramatic, traumatic experience up until that point, and probably for another 10 years after that I had had with a movie where I was so unprepared for what I saw, morbidly curious about it, would rewind it and watch it. Like, what? It's so kind of dark and demented and probably fucked me up a little bit in some way. Who knows? Who can say? But Full Metal Jacket is really great. I love the Matthew Modine character. And when I was a kid, when I was younger, I think I was a little more bothered by the two halves approach to it. You know, like the training, and then there's the Vietnam, which is basically, you know, the back streets of London.
Right. Stanley Kubrick's factory in London.
Right. And, you know, honestly, the second half of it, I'd seen way less because I just was so curious about the boot camp scenes. But as an adult watching it, you realize I take it as a piece, as, you know, as two halves making a whole. And I appreciate it a lot more now. And I think it's a really, really great movie. One of Stanley Kubrick's best, in my opinion.
He, you know, doesn't really have any bad movies, but Full Metal Jacket is probably one of the ones I revisit the most. And again, I have such a weird relationship with Kubrick because for so many years I was like, I don't get it. Like, not he's bad. Like, I legitimately felt like I wasn't getting it because I knew that he was so well respected and considered to be genius. And I would watch his movies and just be like, I don't think I'm smart enough for this. And then over time, I just came to appreciate them more and more because the first time I saw Full Metal Jacket, I was like, that was okay, but whatever. And, you know, it has just gone up and up and up in my estimation to the point where now I would probably call it, if I had to name a favorite war movie, I think it would be this. It would be like this or Three Kings. I just think it's so great. And yeah, it's the one of his that I probably revisit the most. It's also fascinating when I was watching Adventures in Babysitting at the end, Vincent D'Onofrio appears as Thor, the mechanic, you know, his name isn't actually Thor. But he's like svelte and has like, you know, the blonde wig on or whatever, but he's like thin and handsome. And I was thinking this came out the same year as Full Metal Jacket, when he was, you know, he gained all that weight, but I think Full Metal Jacket had been shot considerably earlier because it was just a nightmare of a production. You know, they were only supposed to be there a certain amount of time, and it ended up the production went like for so long. Matthew Modine has a book out about it called like Full Metal Jacket Diaries or Joker Diaries or something. And
by the way, I just realized I called Vincent D'Onofrio's character Joker. I apologize for that mistake. I forget his character's name, but
Pyle.
Joker is
he's Private Pyle.
He's Private Pyle. Yeah, sorry about that.
The book I think just reads like a person going crazy.
Yeah.
Because
have you read it?
I have not. I've just heard him interviewed. I heard him on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast being interviewed about it and talking about some of those experiences. It's a super interesting conversation. Again, if you can get past
Bret Easton Ellis,
what a douchebag Bret Easton Ellis is, but really interesting stories about the making of the movie. Totally worth listening to.
I would say I revisit this movie a lot, that and like scenes of Eyes Wide Shut. But now specifically for you, now I don't want to put words in your mouth, and if my memory is off, but you kind of did you actively dislike this movie for a little bit, or am I thinking of it wrongly? I feel like when we first were friends and I mentioned this movie, you're like, oh, I don't like, maybe, and maybe, again, it might just be,
I don't remember that,
bad
but
memory, and B, maybe, you know.
I don't remember that, but I suppose it's possible. I don't remember ever disliking it.
Gotcha.
My number two?
Yes.
Okay. So Broadcast News could have been my number one or my number two. Ultimately, my number two, I'm going with just kind of preference in taste. And so I went with Angel Heart, which is just such a fucking great movie, and a combination of like a film noir detective movie and a horror movie. Yes, Lewis Cipher is a little on the nose, but I mean, this is like peak Mickey Rourke. He was so cool and handsome, you know, he was just like a cool guy, and now he's just a fucking nightmare of a human being. But yeah, I love the shit out of Angel Heart.
I've seen this movie once. I feel like I rented it when I worked at Blockbuster. And by say renting it, as anyone out there who's worked at Blockbuster knows, you got to take home stuff for free. So this was something that had come out years before I worked at Blockbuster, but was like, oh, Angel Heart. And probably, honestly, the perv in me was like, Lisa Bonet has a scene that I should watch. I watched it. I remember liking the movie. I have not seen it probably since 1994.
It is so good.
I can watch it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. You're number one, sir. Your favorite movie of 1987.
Is Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn.
Nice.
Great horror,
Dead
great comedy.
Dead by Doug.
Dead by Doug, number one. It's basically just a remake of the first movie, but more comedy. I mean, it's a sequel. That's a remake, right? I mean, it's kind of this mixture of the two, right?
Yeah.
Way more comedy. It's Sam Raimi doing everything we love Sam Raimi for. Bruce Campbell being awesome. Great music. The soundtrack kicks fucking ass. What can you say about it?
Nothing. It's a masterpiece of horror and comedy. My number one is the other movie that we're watching this weekend at F This Movie Fest. And
I know what this is.
The movie that is, I think, the best combination of like a movie that I think is objectively a great movie, like one of the best movies ever made, and
Moonstruck
also pushes all my buttons in terms of being a favorite. It's like that perfect storm. And that is RoboCop, because holy fuck, RoboCop is so good.
It's really great. And it would have been on my top 10 list if I hadn't made up weird rules for myself, as we're wont to do at F This Movie. It's also a movie that I had not seen nearly as much. I think we talked about this on a previous show. I'm not even sure what show it would have been, but it was so, I know the scene where his hand gets blown off when he's being dismantled as a human being before he becomes RoboCop. Talk about traumatic movie going experiences, kind of like Private Pyle blowing his brains out. That was like, I had never seen something that graphic before. I've come to love most of what Paul Verhoeven does. I don't know this movie as well as I should. I'm so excited to watch it again, probably only for like the fourth time in my entire life next Saturday. I know.
Yeah, I think it's my favorite movie of that year. I think it's the best movie of that year, which I know some people might disagree with, but that's fine. So you kind of brought it up. Let's segue into that quickly before we wrap up.
I'm surprised that this isn't the final movie of the fest. And you know what you're doing, obviously. You specifically, we all collectively as a group, but you specifically know what you're doing. And I know there's reasons for it, but RoboCop to me seems like it'd be a perfect final movie.
I think Monster Squad would have either...
Down. It's like the come down.
Well, Monster Squad would have either had to go a lot earlier. They could not switch out, I don't think. I don't think it could go Monster Squad, RoboCop. Monster Squad to me has just such a like a lighter, fun vibe.
Sure.
I think it's going to be more of a breeze than RoboCop. And so I almost wanted RoboCop. I put it where it is because I think it's where people are going to be the most focused.
Sure.
And then Monster Squad becomes a little bit more of a blow off in a good way, you know, not in a bad way. But you had brought it up. RoboCop is the movie that I'm most looking forward to watching as a group on Saturday. What movie are you most looking forward to watching?
I would say RoboCop, absolutely number one. As a group, I think Predator is going to be a lot of fun. It's usually I find action movies I feel like in 91, what was the Van Damme movie we saw?
That was 93 when we watched 93? Hard Target.
Hard Target. That was such a fun movie. Like, no expectations. Such a fun movie. Snake punching. so great. So I feel like Predator probably has some of that in it, even though Predator's a way more serious movie than Hard Target. But I feel like action movies always do well for these festivals. I'm excited also about Princess Bride because I want to see – I always love reading people's love for movies, and I want to read that and have an appreciation for it. And I want to be part of the club, to quote Monster Squad.
I think the first half of Predator is going to play like gangbusters, and I think the second half slows down and there's like not as much dialogue. So I'm a little bit concerned about that.
You want to hear my Predator impersonation?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind.
Hold on. I can't do it. Pressure's on. I can't. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. No, that's it.
Do you want to hear my Predator impression? Here it is. Jeez, you got a big pussy. In 1987, I used to wake up at like 5 in the morning on Saturday mornings and just watch the previews on like the Viewer's Choice pay-per-view channel because they would show the commercial for Predator all the time. And it was the only way to see it. You didn't have the internet where you could just watch it again and again on a loop. So I would just wake up at like 5 in the morning on a Saturday and sit by myself in the living room at our one TV and watch the commercial for Predator on repeat. And then eventually I got to see it, and then this was after I had already seen it, by the way, because it was coming to pay-per-view. And then when it showed up on pay-per-view, I was allowed to order it. So, of course, I recorded it so that I would have it. And because at that point, I didn't really own any other rated R action movies, and like I didn't have Commando, because Commando would have given me the fix that I wanted.
Commando's the 91 action movie that I was thinking of, too. That was also
That was 85. So that was like,
was there a 91 action movie
3 years ago? 91. What did we watch? We watched New Jack City, Terminator 2, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Boosh. What else did we watch that year? 91.
That was the second festival.
Yeah.
Well,
I can't remember.
I can't either. So let's cut this part out. Okay.
So, but Commando would have given me the fix that I wanted, but I didn't have Commando. So what I would do is just watch like the first 45 minutes of Predator over and over. Like when they raid that Colombian village and murder everyone, I would stop the movie and not watch all the stuff with the Predator. And I would just go back and rewatch all the action, like shoot 'em up stuff. Last Boy Scout and The Rocketeer. Those were the other two that we watched that year.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm super excited about all of the movies. Obviously, we always enjoy this day. I'm going to miss you a great deal.
Yeah, last year was a big surprise. I flew in to watch it in your basement. It was so fun, and I'm bummed this year because I think Rob DiCristino is coming in. Is that correct?
He is, yeah.
That's great. I'm happy for you guys. It should be an awesome experience for him to meet everyone, because you guys have never met in the flesh, right?
Nope.
Gotcha. But I will be here by myself, probably, as my wife handles the kids, watching movies, tweeting like a madman, pantsless.
And I should say, we haven't formalized any of this yet or figured it out yet, but we will be recording a podcast immediately after the fest, as we always do. And my hope is to, like we did last year, put it up on, I guess, Periscope.
You know, it's interesting. Last year, Periscope was so new. Periscope seems to have not.
That's what I was going to say. Like, Periscope is like MySpace now, because
yeah, it's no one's using it. I was debating, Facebook Live.
Okay. I mean, maybe that's the way to do it.
We can have this conversation offline and later this week, but I've never
should
done
have figured this out so we could advertise what we were doing. But
well, I think during the day, you know, people just stay tuned and you'll probably post something on the website. But it seems like Facebook Live took the Periscope idea and made it better on a platform that more people use. So we already have a pretty well-established Facebook profile for F This Movie, so it only makes sense to maybe do it from there. Although I don't know, kind of the same issue with Periscope, I don't know if it's savable, archivable, how it I don't think it goes away like Periscope does. Periscope's model was that it would disappear after a couple days, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct. So I'll do some research, and the day of the fest, we'll tweet out how you can watch us live after the festival as we record our post-festival podcast. It'll be on one of those platforms, yeah.
It's R.I.P. Doug as my tears stream into my keyboard on my computer and electrocute me.
So. R.I.P.D.
R.I.P.D., my favorite movie from 1987.
So, yeah, please join us for one movie, for all five movies. Make sure that you are using the hashtag FThisMovieFest. You don't need to like at FThisMovie for every tweet. Just follow along with the hashtag. And
yes. Switch it to live, too, because if you search the hashtag, it'll give you top and then live.
Right. Yeah, you have to, live, or so. All tweets or something like
all
that.
All tweets, yeah. So you could see everyone's comments because they're all pretty great. I'm
right.
particularly looking forward to Eric Asperschlager, always kills it. Everyone's really funny, though. It's always so fun to read.
And, of course, wait for us for the start times. And yes. Am I forgetting anything else?
I don't think so. I think we covered everything.
Well, this was very fun, Douglas. Thank you for talking about 1987 with me. What a trip down memory lane this was.
Having me. So many stories about the theater and Blockbuster Video and
Kevin Costner being into pee.
That's absolutely what he is. If anyone tells you otherwise, he's a liar.
As always, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. Follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. Make sure you're doing that. Going into the festival, make sure you follow us. Follow the hashtag FThisMovieFest.
With the Twitter thing, I would say if everyone could follow everyone that participates.
Oh, for
I know
sure.
That's such a
yeah.
weird thing. Like, we have such a great community, so let's all follow each other and get the, you know. I'm at Kevin Costner P.
But that's a great suggestion. We are on Facebook. If you haven't already liked our page, make sure you do in case we end up using the Facebook Live. You can find us there. And you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. I look forward to talking with all of you on Saturday. Douglas?
Yay!
Yeah, I was waiting for you to throw out like a.
I'm also looking forward to talking to you. On Saturday. Oi, I'll be there too.
Hey, Douglas.
Meet me
halfway across the sky.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.